Welcome to the Roanoke Weekly Podcast for October 8th. How are y'all doing today?
Good morning.
How are you?
Brad, how are you?
Doing well. Just a reminder, I'm Brad. We've got Ariel and Xavier here.
Hello.
I'm Ariel, in case anybody was confused.
No, I'm Ariel.
Darn it.
Oh, we have now spread lots of confusion among the folks out there on the airwaves. But, Ariel, what's this we hear about new hemp laws going into effect in the area?
Yeah, well, first let's talk just for a second about hemp. People might know it as a close relative and very similar-looking plant to marijuana plants. Mm-hmm. But as the article says in the very first paragraph, a common refrain when talking about hemp, it's not marijuana. You can't get high off of it. So first of all, in case anyone was confused, hemp is actually a plant that's grown for so many reasons. It's a plant that can be used to make clothing, to make a plastic substitute. You can do tons of stuff with it. And also people have discovered the medicinal benefits of hemp. It's kind of like people use essential oils. The hemp oil has mm-hmm. become very popular. And it looks like some of the legislation around hemp growing and selling is changing in Virginia. So we could see quite a change in the way that we are able to sell and buy that product, which definitely has an impact on our local agribusiness scene.
Very interesting. I know that growing up in Charlottesville, I think it was often told to me that Thomas Jefferson grew hemp up in his place. And I know that there's other folks that use it for all kinds of different purposes. And the Kentucky, I think, is one of the places that's allowed folks to do more with it, and they've really benefited from that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here in Virginia, the most forward-thinking of states.
Yeah, I definitely use the lotion. I get it from Marshall's. And, yeah, there's no, like, marijuana or anything. Like, it's not like that at all.
Right.
It's definitely for, like, soothing and stress relief and stuff like that.
Yeah, apparently people use it with their pets to calm their pets down.
Hmm.
Yeah, so somebody in Botetourt County is growing some and working with a business partner to sell it under a business moniker, and everybody's looking forward to seeing how quickly that industry will grow. Hmm. Pretty neat.
It is indeed.
Yeah. And other good news stories. You know, we like to kick off with some positive news if we can find it. Back when we got the announcement that Deschutes was moving to Roanoke and a few other businesses, we also heard that Eldor Auto Company was moving here. And so they have kicked off production. Their plant in Botetourt has 120 new jobs and plans to grow to 350 jobs over the next couple of years. So that was just this past week that they kicked off. It's kind of exciting times over in Botetourt.
It is. I think it's worth noting that in this article here, and it's interesting to note that this is, therefore, this is the biggest economic news in Botetourt County's history, which I think is an interesting way
That's
of
crazy.
Framing it. But also, it's interesting that I think this is there's the potential for this to really stick around for a while because they're doing some autonomous vehicle stuff there, which I think leads us to believe that there's perhaps some more there. And they're looking at doing electronic charging stations. You know, there's just some really interesting things happening there, and I'll be intrigued to see where it goes from here.
Move over, Elon Musk. We've got Eldor.
We got the Italians.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep everybody posted on all the news on autonomous vehicle development in Botetourt as it happens.
If anybody from Eldor is listening and wants to give us a tour of the facility, I'd be very
really
interested.
Cool.
I will definitely go live on Instagram anytime really you want me to do that. Well, moving into some other not-so-fun news, Roanoke City Treasurer has been working to develop a program to basically get money back, I guess, in some ways, from those who are long delinquent on their personal property tax. It's a towing program, something that happens actually all over the state, all over the country, in districts and in cities that kind of are at their wit's end with trying to get some of this funding back from people who are long delinquent. I mean, there's a lot of things in place to before they start towing cars.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to address some of those qualifications where you could get your car towed? I don't want anybody to panic out there about this.
Well, it looks like you have to be 2 years delinquent in your taxes, your personal property taxes, and owe upwards of $1,500 in taxes, which is a significant amount of this. And then you also, in addition, have to refuse to cooperate or communicate with the treasurer's office. It sounds like, you know, the biggest takeaway for me from this in some ways is that the city really doesn't want to have to do this. Right. They just don't know how else to get the money that they're owed in some ways.
So. Well, it says in here, it says this is a last resort.
Yeah.
So they don't want to have to do this.
Yeah, and they'll work with people. Like,
right.
That, you know, they said people who are already reaching out, who are behind on their taxes but who need help, they're very willing to help. Like, as long as you're talking to the city,
right,
you should be fine. It's people who have been non-communicative and are very, very behind.
I feel like that goes with for anything in life, period, really, if you at least attempt to make a conversation. Like,
yeah.
My mom used to tell me that in school. Well, at least go tell the teacher.
Yeah, ask for help.
Like, that you're going to be late. Yeah. Don't just show up late and then expect her to understand. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, it's interesting, too. Like, I can't imagine the stress in some ways of being 2 years delinquent on your taxes,
right,
and like owing all this money. Like,
and there's probably an embarrassment factor in there.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
You know, I don't want to go have to speak in front of, because, you know, when you go to the city, you're in the front of those windows, everybody can hear you.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand how it can be a fear factor.
But like with anything, you're right. Like, if you ask for help, there are people out there's there people, that are willing to help.
Absolutely.
Most of the time.
Yeah. Well, I guess it works in other places. It's not like this is a Roanoke brainchild here, so we'll see how it goes. 2019 launch of that program, probably.
So pay your taxes now if you're delinquent.
Or reach out to our lovely city treasurer.
She is a very nice woman, actually. So, yes, please.
And be polite.
It's interesting. I don't know how many of you all have been following this story from last year, but there was a push last year to ban guns in city council chambers, and it became clear that was one of the limitations for what the city could do on their own, is that they had to go to the General Assembly to pass laws that would allow them to do that, which is kind of amazing to think about, that our city can't determine what's allowed in their own city council chambers. But that was turned down last year. In fact, I think John Garland told me that they were said, if you send us that to the General Assembly, we will not pass anything else that you want us to pass. But they're going to stick with it and do it again. And so they've officially approved their legislative agenda for this year, which is what all the different things that the city is asking the state to take care of, and have included an ask for legislation to allow municipalities and localities to ban firearms. So I guess we're continuing to push for it, which I'm happy to see that we're not backing down, but I guess I'm less than hopeful that it'll be passed in the General Assembly.
Is it because it's like a public building? Like, what's...
So this is one of my favorite things to talk about, so thank you for asking. But, so Virginia is a Dillon's Rule state, which means that in the state of Virginia, municipalities, localities can't do anything that they're not expressly given permission to do by the General Assembly. It's like you'll hear in other states, like, you know, Seattle passed a $15 minimum wage or whatever. You can't do that in Virginia because the state has not allowed localities to do that. And so essentially what's happening here is that localities don't have express permission to do this, and because of that, they're not then allowed to do that. So, I mean, even like, so things like if we wanted to go to an elected versus appointed school board, we'd have to get General Assembly approval to do that. If we... changing voting districts in the city after the General Assembly. It's really, almost everything seems to have to go through the General Assembly at this point.
So it seems like the big concern with the Dillon's Rule state is that there's a real question of precedent and setting precedents. If the General Assembly is making all of these calls, if they did it for one place, it'd have to do it for the other. Like, there's a lot of, you know, it's almost like a microcosm of the federal government in some ways, which makes it harder to make decisions on localities and based on what the locality wants, the city wants. So
there have been some, there's some stuff that came out about a land bank recently. And so the state allowed municipalities to set up a land bank, But they had actually tested that in one area briefly beforehand and then decided to open it up to everyone. So there's a precedent for that in some ways. But there's also, you know, it all depends. Charlottesville at the moment is trying to figure out whether they want to go to a strong mayor system instead of a city manager system, and that requires them to go through General Assembly. It's just the another example of the funky way that our state runs in many ways. So all that to say, in some ways, give our city council a break sometimes when it comes to not doing everything that we think they should, because oftentimes they can't do the things that they we think they should.
Yeah.
So it's not discouraging, but it's kind of just like, you know, you tell people and you push people to vote on the local level to get the smallest people, but then when you hit, when they actually learn, like, that even the local level has to go to the biggest level to get the small things done.
To then reflect on the local level.
Well, it is, I mean, the city council, like, you're taking so much heat all the time.
Right.
But really,
and
I
now,
mean.
I honestly did not know that until you said it. And so now I'm just like, wow. That makes a lot of sense.
And really, the biggest thing they control is the budget. I mean, that's their main responsibility. Right. Anything else is kind of bonus on top of that in some ways. So it's a, yeah. Anyway, love to talk about Dylan's rule. I think it's a major problem for us. But anyway, let's
Let me give out Brad's cell phone number if you ever want to call him and talk about this. In less exciting news, there's been a report that's come out that methamphetamine has overtaken heroin as one of the area's most popular drugs, second only to marijuana that we spoke about earlier. So in terms of serious drugs, meth is the fave these days. It's overtaken heroin. And that's significant. You know, of course, we talk about addiction and addiction issues here. And this short article on WDBJ was saying that it's not a bunch of meth labs popping up everywhere. It's cheap crystal methamphetamine from Mexico coming into the area. So yeah, just FYI, that's going on.
Well, apparently I was at a presentation, and I usually don't enjoy these presentations because they're usually scare focused on many ways. But there's a presentation I saw recently that talked about how meth and the opioids actually go hand in hand, because when you're taking the opioids, you're way down, and then when you need to go out and get more, you can't. You don't have the energy to do it, and so people will wind up in this cycle of rotating between meth and heroin. And so apparently that's a thing.
Yeah, and look at this. It says, too, that this influx only complicates the already meager treatment options because so much of the state and federal grants are earmarked for opioid-related disorders. So if we're going to have all of this other addiction issue going on with a different type of drug, it might be that we're, what is the phrase, robbing Peter to pay Paul? I think that's some sort of phrase, but basically that we're not going to have the resources available for people if this continues. Yikes.
I do want to note, this is not a good place for a joke, but this article is kind of ridiculous in this line: the uptick is not fueled by meth labs Breaking depicted Bad. On the TV show Breaking Bad. Are you serious? Come on now, WDBJ.
Well, that caught my eye too, and I read it incorrectly first, and I thought it said this uptick is because of the show Breaking Bad. Like, people were like, ooh, meth is cool. Like, gonna try it out. Like, I just skimmed it.
I wonder how many people actually get into it thinking,
like, pop culture.
Right.
Yeah. My wife.
Right. I know how many kids do things because of music.
Yeah.
So how many people are just like, well, this is how they did it on the show. I'm just going to swing this just this way, just a little bit, and think, oh, I can do this because they did it in the show.
My wife and I have talked about, like, that line between where does a show reveal something and when is it glorifying something. And I had a real problem with Breaking Bad because I felt like it was like, there's an excitement and an energy that felt like, oh, this is cool. And like, what does that lead to?
And then they pair it with the saving the family type of thing. So it's like, it's like, oh, I have to do this to save my family.
Teaching kind of a bad lesson there. Yeah. We talk about it with movies and shows that are around eating disorder and disordered eating in general. that those can be considered like a how-to manual, like how to develop anorexia, how to develop bulimia. And that there's a lot about that online, but it definitely can walk a fine line between glorifying it and shedding a light on it. So all of that's very, anyway, I think, you know, it inspired a great conversation, that article. So, all right.
Well, so there's more news on the pipeline. So Ariel, what's going on with this these days?
Yeah, so there was a permit that got suspended for Mountain Valley Pipeline construction in the specific way that it crosses streams and wetlands in Virginia. So there was they had a permit for doing this, and then because of some things that happened in the construction and in the way that it was settling in around these streams and wetlands, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers suspended the permit, which again creates a delay in the entire project. Which has happened left and right throughout this whole year.
I have to confess to being worn out by this story.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's something that pipeline folks count on in some ways, is just kind of having the resources to throw at it again and again, so it just kind of wears everybody down until it's there.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like... Yeah, that they had this permit, but that they were just kind of barreling through the project over, you know, farmland, and they were trenching and all this stuff, and then they get shut down. Now it's just, again, sitting there like half finished, causing all sorts of erosion damage and land damage, and just sort of sitting there. I mean, I'm sure they'll pick it up and start again, but...
Well, it sounds like there's not... Even though the permits have been suspended at the moment, there has not been a stop order put on work, and so they continue just continuing on in some ways. So, but we will keep you guys updated as things continue.
I feel like we should have like a sad musical interlude when we start talking about the MVP. Like, yeah, it's at least once a month topic these days.
Oh, my.
What's next on the docket here?
This one seems a little more upbeat here.
Oh, yeah. Pause for happy story. the Volvo plant in Pulaski County invited a bunch of middle school students to take a look at the manufacturing industry. And this is a very specific story, but it speaks to a much larger topic we've talked about, you know, a number of things, engaging the kids and giving them opportunities to see different types of careers. Mm-hmm. One thing, another thing is letting them know that there are jobs for them here in this area, and they don't have to leave necessarily. They can find a career path here. And they got to build mini Volvo trucks, which sounds really fun.
That does sound really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think as I'm looking at it, I think you don't see that a lot where, schools are taking kids. Everything's like college trips. But you don't see it where it's like, hey, I'm going to show you a job that you can actually work and make some money and provide for your family if you decide that you don't want to go the college route. And I guarantee you, I mean, those middle schoolers are about to go to high school, and they'll start experiencing things that will make them, you know, think about, hey, this is what I want to do with my life. I'm either going to work or I'm going to go to school. But at least exposing them to that lets them know that there are other routes
totally
that they could go.
That reminds me, I think it was middle school probably, that we went to, up in Charlottesville, we went to visit the Coca-Cola bottling plant in town. And it wasn't, even as someone who didn't really want to work there and didn't view it as an option, I think it's also informative just to know what's happening in your community in some way. Mm-hmm. So for these kids to know, like, you know, there are a lot of businesses and things happening here that you may not always see.
Yeah, like when you're a kid, I mean, even when you're in college as like a young adult, I think the world of manufacturing, unless you have a family member who works in it, can be really behind the curtain because it typically is B2B. Like, there's no consumer outlet for the in-between steps with things being made. Like, my dad owns a manufacturing business in North Carolina. They apply adhesives to large reams of paper. And then those get sold to make labels and stuff. Like, the end user doesn't ever see the stuff that my dad's company does. And so having your mind opened to all of the steps that make up the businesses in your community, I think is a really healthy way to start seeing your community. It's not just the retail and the government side of things. Like, there's so much nuance in there. So go Volvo. It's awesome. In other news, man, Lewis Gale trying fourth time's the charm, hopefully, in seeking a NICU approval for the Lewis Gale Hospital. So this is kind of a complicated story. We were talking about it earlier, but basically Lewis Gale does not have a neonatal intensive care unit because you can only have a certain number per district of these, because it does make services more expensive at these types of places with trauma one and NICU services. So, you know, there's a plus and a negative side to this story for sure. And Lewis Gale has determined that it would be more beneficial to have it than not. So they're going for the fourth time in 7 years to seek approval.
Yeah, this kind of mirrors another story where they've been seeking approval to be a trauma one center for a while as well. And it's, you know, it's one of these things where I think what I was sharing before we came on the air is that it's really a cost thing in some ways. The reason that these are not approved is the, you know, when these hospitals spend more money, somebody has to pay for that. And where does that money come from? And so it's the reason why these aren't just automatically kind of approved and hospitals aren't allowed to do whatever they want to do. But it is, you know, the idea of parents, new parents and babies being separated is just someone with a one-year-old fairly terrifying. You know, our child was taken away for about 4 hours when she was born, and I can't imagine her going to another facility and us not being able to see her for that time. And but, you know, again, there are bigger trends at play in terms of how much the costs to have a child, which is also an exorbitant amount of money. And so it's just, there's a lot of factors in play here that on the surface we may not see, but that hopefully they'll be able to get this worked out. It looks like it's a fairly small unit that they only want to have, be able to do eight children, eight babies. And that, you know, that's much smaller than Carilion's 60 unit NICU. So, we'll kind of see how that goes over the next the next little bit. Apparently approval will come in November. Or as early as November,
We'll have an update soon, I guess.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Indeed. I mean, we are a, well, we talked about this last week. We're not growing quite as like magnificently as the PR around it may seem, but we are growing and maybe in especially in like the young, if people are, young people are moving here, those people are the people that will have babies eventually. Retired people tend to not have babies in most cases.
That does seem to be the trend.
Indeed. well, a fun little downtown report here. We've been talking about some murals over the course of the time we've been doing this podcast, and just wanted to throw a new one out there for everybody to go check out. There is a new Carvin's Cove mural in downtown Roanoke on, it's on the building where Blue Five is, I'm pretty sure. Is that right? Okay, now you guys.
I was wondering.
I was looking at it, I was like, I cannot figure out where this is.
I think, yeah.
Now that I see the Premier parking sign.
Right, because, so there's that parking lot, and if you're, if you look to the right from the mural, it's where that like corkscrew parking deck is there. There used to be another mural there. It was like a very faded pink and green camo. And when I read the article, it turns out that that was exposed when they took down a building there. So that was like an interior mural or something. And so they uncovered that and it stayed there for a while. But now they've put up a new mural. And one thing that's really cool about this is it's a reproduction of a painting by a high school student. So that is awesome. Go Ashley Roop. Your painting is enormous now and everybody's going to see it. And it's up Carvin's Cove, which is really, really neat.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so go check that out. It looks like it's...
I'm glad that they, that Roanoke is starting to tap into the art scene.
Oh, man.
And that's another reason why people won't leave, because people will be more apt to stay if there's an art scene here, because they know that they can just give back to their own community and not have to go to Richmond and other cities to express themselves.
Yeah, and see this beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
It's like part of, it becomes part of your skyline to have these murals. And, you know, I see that one of the girl on the Big Lake Brewery wall, you know, every day. I'm near there all the time. And it just is part of my Roanoke now.
I'm very intrigued by the history of these pieces of artwork. So I'm very intrigued by that, learning about that being uncovered. But also, do you guys remember that there used to be a mural on the side of the building that Big Lake Brewery used to be in? It was like weird, like, woman with words around the outside of her and stuff like this.
Further down in Salem?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that mural, I don't think.
I really want to know the story because it's been odd to me when we moved to town and then all of a sudden it disappeared and I want to know the story.
Well,
of it, so.
Hey, out there, if you know the story of the mural, please, actually, you know, we joke about calling in, there's no phone number, but email us.
You can actually on the Anchor app leave us voice messages.
You can.
What? That's weird. Do that. Somebody do that. Let's check that out. And then you can email us roanokeweekly@gmail.com or, you know, hit us up on the gram and let me know or let Brad know what is going on with the disappearing
intrigued.
Woman mural. let's see. Yeah, it's really neat. Okay.
Cool.
Let's move on to our. Well, unless anybody has anything else to cover, we should move on to our spotlights.
Let's do that.
Who wants to kick us off?
Ariel, what do you got for us?
Oh, okay, I'll kick us off. Great. so I am a proud board member of the Jefferson Center, which is in downtown Roanoke, down in the in between sort of the West End neighborhood and downtown. Very close to West Station. You know what I'm talking about. Jefferson Center is once was a high school. Many people around here are alumni of that high school. And then it closed down for a number of years. And in collaboration with the city and a number of people who wanted to see it become a community asset again, it was reopened and they put a performing arts center in the auditorium and they renovated a bunch of office suites. And so now it is a building that contains not only a music venue, performing arts venue. It actually has three music and performing arts stages and venues in there. And then they also have a Montessori school. They host multiple different nonprofits and businesses who rent offices in there. And there's a music lab there. So they're actually teaching high school and I think middle school students too how to play instruments in a band setting. Yeah, it's a really cool arts and culture. I mean, it's in terms of arts and culture spotlight, there's many things about it to spotlight. I could do an individual spotlight on the music or on the music lab. But as an element, as like a, you know, it's greater than the sum of its parts. It's a really cool space. If you haven't been to the Jefferson Center, I highly recommend you checking it out. It's a beautiful building. And there's plenty of shows coming up this holiday season that would be worth checking out. So do that.
Very cool. They do have some of the best shows in Roanoke that are a little outside the norm, but still very cool.
Yeah, just check off what Brad just said. It's the ticket prices are going to be a little bit more than some of the other music venues in town, but it is a listening room setting. You can basically hear a pin drop between songs when people are being quiet. It's one of those rooms that a musician will stop in the middle and be like, this is the best sound I've ever heard. So if you're like a sound junkie and really care about what something sounds like, it's really fun to listen to music in there. Yeah, gotta check it out.
Definitely will. I guess it's on to me with the food. This week we're gonna switch it up just a little bit. It's not really so much as a restaurant, but a nice shop that I would like to highlight, Little Green Hive. Big shout out to them. I've been getting my Green Hive smoothie there with vegan protein. And I definitely want to shout them out. She's an amazing lady. They have the locations in Grandin and 16 West Marketplace. She has amazing smoothies, a lot of additions that you can add to it.
Coffee.
Yeah, coffee, food. The Grandin location has a nice little space that you can read and sit down and relax. So I definitely wanted to highlight her for the week.
Although you're likely to run into one of us, which might put you off the whole coffee shop experience.
Yeah.
I like her. I like her setup. I think she's trying to get another one somewhere.
Yeah,
it's been really fast. I mean, they have one on Roanoke College's campus, and I'm pretty sure she was looking to move into Christiansburg as well.
Yeah, which is I think that's what she was telling me too. So.
Yeah, so. They serve Red Rooster Coffee, which you guys know we love, and very sweet staff people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love stopping in there. Yep.
And her son works.
Mm-hmm. Family, the family biz for sure. Definitely. Yeah.
It's well, we look forward to when they become Big Green Hive here.
Medium green.
That was funny, Brad. Big Green Hive.
Good dad joke there for you guys.
I never understood, why is it called a dad joke?
Because we tell bad jokes, exactly.
Oh, that's what it's called. That's why it's called like, that.
Yeah, I think
there's like a whole YouTube channel about dad jokes. Yeah.
I don't know. It's like when people, especially men, get to a certain age, it's like they start, they get less raunchy and more just like silly. Okay. And it's like you can tell it around kids, but really it's like for themselves. And they're like, that's funny, right? And everybody's kind of like, not really, but I see where you're coming from. Like you can sympathize with a dad joke, you know?
Okay. I like to say I only aim to make myself laugh with my jokes.
So, that's, there you go. That's the definition of a dad joke.
That's all that matters.
Well, for our business spotlight this week, I wanted to focus on the cohort from RAMP. So if you don't know what RAMP is, it's our regional accelerator program. They're based downtown in the lovely green building across from the library. They've got their second cohort going on right now. They had their demo day just last week, which was a chance for all of the businesses to share what they're up to. But doing some really, really fascinating work over there. Anything from next level diagnostics and 3D printing for medical uses from Skyfo's technology, which I'm probably butchering, to beam diagnostics, which is a way that they're using an app to reinforce how people can use self-control and how they can overcome some of the negative behaviors and that they've been doing. To some pharmaceuticals, some health data collection tools, really some interesting businesses there. If you're interested more, check out the RAMP website. It's got all of them on there. And again, I think it's a benefit for all of us to know more about those businesses that we don't necessarily see out there on the mainstream. So that's very cool.
Anything that's not directly consumer focused or local consumer focused can be a little hard to get to know, but RAMP focuses on helping and mentoring scalable technology businesses. So these businesses are starting small. You know, it's just a few people, but the idea with most of them is that they will end up scaling quickly, hiring a lot of people locally, and being the next Eldor. Botetourt's biggest news ever, you know, hopefully in the city of Roanoke or somewhere adjacent. And so we should, as a community, if you have extra bandwidth in your brain to support them, think about it a little bit and check them out.
Absolutely.
For events this week, I kind of wanted to do what we did last week and talk mostly about what I think is one of the largest events that Roanoke hosts all year round. And we could talk about some of the events that go along with that and then anything else you guys wanted to go over. But GoFest is this weekend. This is an annual event put on by Roanoke Outside and a number of other partners of theirs. And it is a Friday through Sunday, right? It starts Friday? Yeah, Friday through Sunday. Free event at Riverside Park right in front of Carilion Hospital. And there is, I mean, gosh, there's so much stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And it's probably my favorite event of the year because I love this month. I love the weather. And actually, the weather's looking excellent for this weekend. So I love hanging out outside. And you can just sort of wander around and drink a beer or a coffee or something and just look at crazy activities and vendors. And there's families and dogs everywhere. And it just seems like everybody's having a good time. And it's like thousands and thousands of people. So it's really good people watching. Mm-hmm. But it focuses on mostly outdoor type stuff.
And Xavier's going to be there for the first time this year.
Yes, I will definitely be there.
Are you vending? Are you doing?
I've never been. I've never.
Oh, you're
been.
Going? Just yeah, as I'm a going. Attendee.
Yeah, Pete. Shout out to Pete Eshelman. We've been going back and forth, and he's like, bring some kids out here. So
nice.
I'm going to bring some of the kids because
they will love it.
and I think the biggest thing that he's trying to do is broaden it to not just the the same focus point.
Right.
So he's trying to get it. And I'm like, I would love to get my kids out there because not all kids are interested in the same thing. And I might have kids that have been waiting to come to something like this to see bike riders and dogs and stuff like that in the outside world. So I'm really excited to take some kids out there. And I think my girls program is going to be glamping.
Awesome.
They're doing that.
Oh, they're going to love that.
With the
that.
Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited for this.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to explain how much there is going on at GoFest.
There's a lot.
And if you think it's just for like hippies and outdoor people, there are people doing chainsaw contests.
Yeah.
There are, you know, people doing the jumping dogs where they throw the stuff and the dogs jump into water. Like, it is just pure entertainment, even if you don't like quote, outdoorsy stuff. And there's music. I mean, free music festival basically going on simultaneously. Yeah. And BMX stuff and like giveaways and food and drink, food trucks.
Blah, blah. I would encourage anybody, even if you're not interested in it, like, this is your moment for when you say there's nothing to do.
Yeah, go check this out.
There's something to do.
Yeah.
And if you want to be active this weekend, there's a number of ways to get active. There's a 5K on Saturday morning that's a fun run. Like, you can have your family there. You can run with your dog. So I'll be doing that. That's the superhero 5K. So everybody dressed up like superheroes. The Wild Gear Chase is on Sunday, which is a crazy event that takes too long to explain, but you can look it up. Lots of cool prizes there. There's a self-directed race called King and Queen of the Mountain, where you can like try to be the best time running up Mill Mountain over the course of the weekend.
Won't be in that one.
Yeah, that one's really intense. but there's just a ton of ways to get active or to just chill out. So anyway.
And there will be the greatest sport on the planet in the form of Ultimate Frisbee happening. Mm-hmm. So get out and enjoy.
BMX, cyclocross, Ultimate Frisbee, running, chainsawing, dog jumping, dog agility, bike throwing. They usually have a bike throwing event that the public can enter. Oh, slacklining, bike jousting. What else? A beer mile, I think.
Xavier and I are going to bring a basketball hoop and play some.
Do
play
it,
some
man.
Basketball.
I'm all for it. I'm all for it. We hooped yesterday outside.
Oh man,
some little that's sore. Awesome.
I mean, when you're ready to really get into it, let me know.
Okay. I got you.
Oh boy. Well, cool. I mean, hey, this is a great call to action. Go do some stuff. I think we're going to get some rain this week. It looks like it's going to be a pretty wet week, but then it's going to cool off and dry out right in time for GoFest. So come out of your little hidey holes and come hang out.
Hidey holes.
Yeah, you know. That's where I go when it rains. I go to my hidey hole. It's called my house. So hopefully see you guys out there.
Very cool.
Like, subscribe, rate, send. Click.
Yes,
stomp.
And please congratulate Xavier on his Community Placemaker of the Year award from CityWorks Expo.
Yay. I appreciate it. Definitely
well deserved.
Definitely a cool event, and to see the people get awarded and actually share their experience and where it comes from, the drive. Shout out to Downshift. I'm really, really feeling them right now. I'm really feeling them. So I'll probably stop by there today
and
just show some love. I've had a couple meetings there, but I want to know a little bit more about it because they were really, really cool. That dude seems really cool.
Good deal.
They are cool.
Yeah.
Love you guys. All right. Well, we'll be back next week.
Yes. And in the meantime, to reiterate what Ariel said earlier, like, rate, subscribe.
I said it very poorly.
and we'll see you next week.
All right.